UBS takes over Credit Suisse as regulators look to shore up global banking. But Asian and European markets fall ahead of the US Open.
At the end of the day, banking is all about confidence. I think we're learning this over the past month, few weeks. It's all about confidence.
And China's leader meets with Vladimir Putin in Moscow. It's Monday, March 20th. I'm Sandra Kilhoff, covering for Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Contagion is the word on everyone's lips this morning after Swiss authorities last night orchestrated a deal for UBS to take over beleaguered bank Credit Suisse for more than $3 billion. The deal has been welcomed by regulators who had worried that a collapse of Credit Suisse could reverberate among large banks in a number of countries. We've also learned that the US Federal Reserve worked with its Swiss counterpart on the deal in order to support global financial stability. But the deal may not be enough to assuage investors, with stock markets in Asia and Europe down today. Here to unpack what this all means for you, me, and investors is Journal Markets Editor Quinton Webb. Hi, Quinton.
Hi there.
Quinton, first off, we're seeing the markets in Asia, here in Europe, they're down this morning. They don't really seem to be particularly optimistic about this deal quite yet. Why is that?
Well, I think there's partly a sort of general sense of risk aversion, and there's also some surprises in the structure of the deal. So, for example, holders of riskier bonds known as additional tier one capital were basically wiped out by the deal, which wasn't necessarily what the bond market was expecting. And so that creates some issues for investors in bank credit, bank bonds, effectively. So that's one of the issues. And of course, you know, what happens with Credit Suisse doesn't necessarily mean that the global banking sector is completely back to being on an even keel. We've still got big question marks about the health of some other important institutions.
So really what we're seeing here is a lot of market jitters ahead of the US market open. I guess I want to know what this tells us about investor confidence when it comes to the US banking crisis, Quinton, and particularly First Republic, which still remains a real pressure point.
That's true. And indeed, First Republic was downgraded again by one of the rating agencies over the weekend. I guess the read across between Credit Suisse and First Republic is somewhat complicated in that Credit Suisse is a bigger and more globally connected institution, but it does point to one potential way in which First Republic's issues could be resolved, which is that perhaps regulators could look to orchestrate some other kind of rescue takeover for First Republic. But our reporting suggests that's not the kind of preferred outcome, at least amongst First Republic's team. And so they will be looking to see if they can kind of ride out the storm without so drastic a measure.
But nevertheless, you are seeing a lot of strain on the markets. And one of the things that central banks have done to try and improve liquidity right now is by announcing yesterday that they will move US dollars among themselves each day instead of just once a week. Can you just explain to our listeners what that does and why policymakers are choosing to do this now?
Well, so these are what are called dollar swap lines, and they become very important at times of financial stress. And what happens when you have kind of global financial stress is that there's a heightened demand for dollars, not just in the US, but globally. And so by tweaking the system in this way, it effectively means that dollars are more readily available should financial institutions in various parts of the world need them.
And this is all super interesting because it comes ahead of a Fed meeting just later this week. I mean, last night we heard from Chair Jerome Powell, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. They issued a statement saying the capital and liquidity positions of the US banking system are strong. The US financial system is resilient. I guess, Quinton, I'm wondering how policymakers are going to be looking at the developments over the past 2 weeks and how that will play into that rate decision this week.
Well, so investors broadly expect this is likely to make the Fed tread more carefully when it comes to future rate rises because it has to weigh up financial stability against inflation fighting. And so, for example, if you look at market pricing, there is now an almost 60% implied probability that the Fed holds steady at this week's meeting, whereas a month ago, there was a 0% probability implied in market prices that they would hold steady. Most market participants were effectively betting that they would increase rates by a quarter point. So that is the kind of widespread assumption nowadays, is that the Fed will have to go a little bit softer to kind of make sure that it doesn't add to the financial strains on the system.
Quentin Webb is a markets editor with the Wall Street Journal. Quentin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much.
So Swiss authorities have orchestrated the biggest deal between two systemically important banks since the financial crisis. More on that deal and the risks behind it after the break.
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
The UBS Credit Suisse deal is the first mega merger of two banks considered too big to fail since the 2008 financial crisis. It was engineered by regulators who were eager to halt a dangerous decline in confidence in the global banking system. But how does a systemically important bank like Credit Suisse get to this point where its market value has more than halved and it finds itself taken over by its biggest rival? Here to unpack it all is Wall Street Journal banking reporter Patricia Kausman, who joins me from Zurich, Switzerland. Patricia, first off, UBS is buying Credit Suisse for more than $3 billion. It's a lot of money, but quite a deal when you think about the actual value of Credit Suisse just a week ago. What happened here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of money is relative. If you think $3 billion is less than half of Credit Suisse was worth in terms of market value on Friday. And what happened was that this almost 167-year-old bank, like huge Swiss bank with global operations, had to be quickly sold over the weekend because customers basically lost faith in it and withdrew their money in droves. Credit Suisse was already sort of a troubled institution before last week. It faced a series of scandals and trading losses, and it showed like basically the bank had a management risk problem. But by no means this bank looked like at risk of failure. And then earlier this month, there was the sudden collapse of Silicon Valley, which basically prompted investors to look at who else in the banking industry was weak. And once they spotted Credit Suisse, they started selling the shares and customers started taking the money out. So it was a classic, you know, run on the bank that we've seen countless times at this point.
And what I thought was so interesting about that press conference last night, Patricia, was that it wasn't just the bank chairmen who were there to talk about this deal, but the Swiss regulators were there, even the Swiss president. How were they involved?
Yeah, I mean, the Swiss authorities like basically engineered the whole thing. This was not UBS saying, I would love to buy Credit Suisse. It was the Swiss authority saying, UBS, please buy Credit Suisse. And the thing is, it was either getting UBS to buy or let Credit Suisse go bankrupt. And that was extremely dangerous for Switzerland because Credit Suisse is a very big bank here. And of course, to the global financial system, because Credit Suisse, you know, it has global operations. It has operations in Asia, in South America, in the US, of course. And if you look at the mechanics of the deal, like there is taxpayer money that is going to probably be spent on this. So it's not only UBS buying it for $3 billion. You have the Swiss government providing this guarantee that can go up to $9 billion to cover losses that UBS may incur on some like Credit Suisse assets. And then you have the National Central Bank of Switzerland also having to provide this massive $100 billion liquidity line for UBS if it's needed. So it's a massive deal where all sides basically had to accept taking some kind of risk, of course, including UBS.
So Patricia, when you've got that amount of support from regulators, from the Swiss government, what does this tell us about the significance of this deal for global market stability?
Yeah, I mean, the idea is like basically when you think they had no option, this idea of going bankrupt, letting a bank of the size of Credit Suisse just fail would have like consequences of confidence for the entire global system. If you think about other banks, you know, depositors starting to think, oh my God, if a bank like this can fail, my bank can fail. And suddenly you have a contagion that is already happening to a certain extent. I mean, if you think about Credit Suisse not being a bank that was likely to fail like a week ago, suddenly becoming one already shows the kind of uncertainty and nervousness that, you know, not only investors are feeling, but depositors as well.
And it's so interesting that you mentioned this idea of too big to fail, because that also came up in last night's press conference. And because essentially with UBS taking over Credit Suisse, they are going to be on par with Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank in size. Did regulators have anything to say there about the concerns surrounding the creation of a bank that is even bigger to fail?
You know, again, like, there is no other option. And, you know, it was either that or a much bigger problem for Switzerland and the global markets and other banks. It shows that on paper, the idea of letting banks fail makes sense, but in practice, it's just too dangerous. You can't just let them fail. Credit Suisse didn't fail because it didn't have enough money or didn't have enough capital. It failed because of an event occurred where it just, people lost trust in the bank, started taking the money out. And that for a bank is the, you know, it's the end of it. So I'm not sure how much holding more capital, holding more liquidity, et cetera, will avoid, you know, future events. But that's what they say, right? The authorities, that's what they are saying. With the too big to fail will come more requirements, more demands for these banks.
But it's so interesting that you can't really guard against a crisis of confidence.
Not really. I mean, at the end of the day, banking is all about confidence. I think we're learning this over the past month, few weeks. It's all about confidence.
And one of the worries here, Patricia, related to this deal is about the writing down of more than $17 billion of the bank's riskiest assets. These are known as additional tier one bonds, COCOs. That could threaten a $250 billion market. Can you explain to us what these COCOs are and what the risk is here?
Sure. So to keep it simple, these are securities that basically look like bonds of a bank, but they are considered very risky because the idea is that if a bank runs into trouble, they eventually can become worthless. Of course, because they are that risky, you know, they provide great returns. But as long as things go well, if they don't, as you saw yesterday, investors can just lose the money. What the Swiss authorities said was that this would be wiped out and kind of implied that it meant that it was burden sharing with the private investors, given the Swiss government may end up losing billions on this deal. The typical holders are like more sophisticated investors because it's such a risky type of security. In theory, shareholders should lose money before these guys do. And in the case here, because UBS is actually buying Credit Suisse, shareholders are going to get some money. They're not going to get much money, but they certainly will not get whatever it's, you know, Credit Suisse was worth on Friday. But they'll get something. These ones are going to get nothing. Again, the price of these securities is probably going to like skyrocket. And that's going to be bad for banks because banks use that for funding. It's a source of funding for them.
Okay, so that's a really big concern right now, I guess, now that the deal is done, is that this could be the next hurdle for banks. Is that correctly understood, Patricia?
Yeah, it could be like we have to see how markets react today, but that could be a source of stress, yes.
So finally, Patricia, looking ahead, what comes next when it comes to this deal?
I think we're all bracing to see reaction from various parties today. The biggest question is, does this end here? Or will contagion continue? And if it does, who could be next? You know, Credit Suisse was sort of the target last week. And the question mark is, does this deal ease concerns? Do people think it's an isolated case? Or do they start thinking it's become systemic and start looking for the next victim? We're going to have to wait and see. But I think that the bank failures in the U.S. and Switzerland show how much depositors' confidence in banks matter, and how quickly that can really evaporate.
That was Wall Street Journal banking reporter Patricia Kausmann joining me from Zurich, Switzerland this morning. Patricia, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
In other news today, Chinese leader Xi Jinping is meeting Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow today. Our reporter Austin Ramsey in Hong Kong says the visit showcases Beijing's support for Moscow amid escalating East-West tensions over the war in Ukraine.
I think first and foremost from this trip, we will expect Xi and Vladimir Putin to display their friendship and the partnership of their two countries. The two men are quite close. I think beyond that, there will be some talk of peace in Ukraine. Mr. Xi has made it clear that he's trying to have a greater role in promoting peace in the region. Xi Jinping plans to call Volodymyr Zelensky after this trip, the journal has reported last week. So that would be a step forward. But it doesn't really seem like either Ukraine or Russia are really prepared for a ceasefire or to stop fighting right now.
Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday visited the occupied Ukrainian city of Mariupol in his first trip to territory seized in the past year. Putin's trip came 2 days after the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for him and another Kremlin official for war crimes tied to Russia's alleged forced deportation of children from Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine, including Mariupol. The Kremlin has rejected the court's authority. And comments by former President Donald Trump over his possible arrest have been derided by top Republicans as politically motivated. Democrats warned his social media comments were irresponsible and risked new violence akin to the Capitol riot. In an all-cap social media message posted on Saturday, Trump said he expected to be arrested on Tuesday. He called the prosecution an effort to derail his presidential campaign and called for protests, urging supporters to take our nation back. The precise charges prosecutors are considering aren't known, but the Manhattan District Attorney's Office has looked at charging Trump with a felony version of a state offense for falsifying business records. A grand jury has been hearing from witnesses involved in the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels and its aftermath since late January. And that's what's news for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Sandra Kilhoff with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.